I hope you're strapped in and strapped on. Women, kind of in this context as women, turning themselves on.
I am a sexual empowerment coach, intimacy coach, and I talk about sex all day. Be as open as you can.
But bodies are bodies.
You're not going to dim my shine.
Hi, folks, and welcome back to Sex Essentialist. Today, I am joined by sexual empowerment coach and therapist Lauren of Oh Yeah Coaching, which I hear is like a very visceral, like, oh yeah, coaching in my head, who, among many things, you could say specializes in helping people get comfy with the uncomfy parts of being human. But again, we'll get into some of that here in a minute. Lauren, welcome to the show. Yeah, I'm excited to get into all things, you know, sex, as we do. But before we get into today's topics, I'd love to kick it off with just having you share with our listeners how you identify, whatever that means to you.
Yeah, I'm a straight woman. I currently am dating men, and I have she and her pronouns.
Cool. Awesome. So as listeners know, and as you know, I think it's a fun way to introduce people, getting to know them a little bit more intimately and getting to know them as a sexual, romantic person by having them share some kind of anecdote. I believe you've got a story or two prepped for us today, so I'll hand it over to you to share them with us.
I do. So I think it's kind of funny because, like, I am a sexual empowerment coach, intimacy coach, and I talk about sex all day. Mm-hmm. And I'm currently not having sex, besides with myself.
Fair enough.
And so that's kind of an interesting, and it's been like that for years now. I was like in a long distance relationship.
Yeah.
And it's helped me got to really get to know myself. But it is interesting to have this like deep desire for intimacy and want to connect with people.
Yeah.
And talk about it all day long, support clients in it. Yeah. And not be engaging in sex with anybody right now besides myself.
Yeah. So I would love to know a little bit more than that. And like, for the record, I do not think every intimacy or sex coach or therapist needs to be actively having sex with anyone. But I would say it's less common than not, right? So I'm curious, like you said, that came out of being mostly in a long-term relationship. And now is it's just by choice, I assume you're enjoying being intimate.
No, I'm trying to date. I'm trying to get on people. And it is rough out here.
We hate it. We need sex right now. Okay, got it. That's funny. Yeah, no, that is a little bit of like, it's not an oxymoron. Again, like there are, I'm sure, wonderful like asexual or non-sexual identifying folks who are fantastic sex and intimacy coaches. But a lot of the time when I talk to people, they're like, I'm out here and I'm kinky and I'm doing it. So, well, honestly, like it segues nicely into some of what we're talking about today, which is about mindfulness, turning yourself on, using your values to feel comfortable in your own skin and in your sex life. And, weirdly enough, I feel like that your really neatly ties into that. But yeah, I'd love to kind of start from the beginning, really. How did you get into being a sex therapist and coach?
So I originally I got my master's in art therapy. And, you know, I love doing art therapy. It's expressive. And I always wanted to get into pole dancing. And I lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico at the time. I live in Ohio right now, but I lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico at the time. And a studio opened up down the street for me. And I was like, finally, like I can start taking pole classes. And it was like this cute little studio. And I started taking pole. And it really like, I learned how to be sexy for myself and really open up this like, sensual part of myself that was super healing and super validating. And started doing research. And I found the Sexual Health Alliance. And I haven't finished it yet. I'm about to be a certified sex therapist and sex coach.
Yeah, nice.
But I got into that and it just like opened up all these like possibilities of like, we need to be talking about this. Like this was such a huge healing piece for me and important to my confidence and my own sexuality. And that's how I got into it.
I love that. Yeah, that's such a like tangible and somatic way to get into the work. I find that there is something so healing and being like truly present in your own form. And I feel like and we can get into this really, but I feel like a lot of what comes up on the show is the role that society plays in stifling like all of our abilities to be one with our bodies, connected with our bodies, especially those of us who face the consequences of living in a patriarchal society. Obviously everyone does, but both of us being cis women, obviously there's a disconnect often between the way we actually feel in our bodies and the way we're told to feel in our bodies. So that's an incredible way to explore that on your own and decide to kind of pursue it for others.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So one of the things that we talked about today is women, kind of in this context, cis women, turning themselves on. What do you see in your work kind of surrounding, or personal life, I suppose, and surrounding kind of that concept, and how does it manifest in the way that you think about sex therapy and sex coaching?
Yeah. Where do I want to start with that? I would say something I see a lot is women clamming up and making it all about their partner, or not feeling like super confident in their sexuality or being able to express it, because like, you know, you can either feel too slutty or not slutty enough, or all those like spectrums of things that women are expected to be all at once and not all at the same time. And so I see a lot of women not being able to step into that like confidence and clam up. And then also personally, past Lauren, would all the pleasure was about them and satisfying my partner, and it was just like, okay, I'm done, like sex is over now that you've ejaculated, we're done,
totally
me kind of thing. And as I got to like explore my own body and like figure out exactly what I like, it was like, fuck that, like
totally,
this is not serving both of us, you know, like this person's also missing out on experiencing my pleasure and pleasuring me. And so that opened up, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah. What are some, kind of on that note, what are some like misconceptions or like misunderstandings that women have about their self-arousal that you encounter, or like what are some of the stigmas that they have surrounding this idea of like turning themselves on when you work with clients, or obviously your own personal experience too?
I think like people feel like they're dirty and they're not supposed to be feeling turned on, and they're not allowed to be turned on. And I see themselves like shut themselves down and just like, it's almost like they're in their heads and not in their bodies.
Yeah.
Is something I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think especially like when we're thinking about cis women in heteronormative contexts, right? Yes. Like, I mean, in every country is different. Obviously, we're both based in the US, so we're both speaking specifically from our lived and professional experiences in this particular country. So I won't speak from a global standpoint, but the culture has often been, there's either like the slut or the virgin, right? And like the classic stereotypes in media, you know, biblically, like everywhere else, right? And we live by those. I feel like recently, and really only for people who are kind of in the sex ed or sex coaching space, is there like an idea of like a cis straight woman as like verse, right? Where like she doesn't have to just be submissive, she doesn't have to just be dominant, she can be anything on a spectrum. It's all a spectrum, including this idea of self-arousal, right? You can be a giver, but also seek out pleasure of your own. And you can, I mean, if seeking pleasure out from giving, it's your thing, then like that's one way to do it, but it doesn't have to be, right? Exactly. You can be a receiver. Like that's okay too.
I guess too, it's like hoping people just give them the opportunity to explore and figure out exactly what they like. Because you could choose to be like, I only want to, you know, I only want to give pleasure to my partner, and that's totally fine. But did you give yourself space enough to explore that you even enjoy receiving pleasure at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah. In your mind, what does that exploration look like when someone is on their own trying to figure it out?
I would say just like being curious and open-minded to trying new things and really like going inward and even just like journaling after an experience. Did I like that? What did I like about that? What did it feel like? You know, am I okay with not exploring that anymore, or am I curious about exploring that more? Just being more curious and experimenting. I'm a huge, like, I feel like life is just this giant experiment. It's not black and white, right or wrong, this or that. It's this fluid thing. Everything's on a spectrum, and we don't need to fit in these cookie cutter boxes. There's so much to experiment with and have fun with.
Totally. And I feel like our bodies in so many different ways are vehicles for pleasure. And I love, at least that's the phrasing that I really like to use, because it's what rings true for me. But I think, you know, one of the things that comes to mind when I think about all of this is that I feel like masturbation is treated as such a no-no in our society, but particularly for vulva owners, for women, right? It's such like a shameful, like, you know, for cis men, it's a, you know, you have to jack off, otherwise your balls get too full, right? There's like childhood stigmas around why you should masturbate, as opposed to for us ladies, it's different. How does masturbation, or how do you think of masturbation as a tool for that self-exploration? And are there ways that people should think about masturbation to get to know themselves?
Oh yeah, definitely. It depends, but a lot of women I've seen are afraid to touch themselves. They don't feel like they have permission to touch themselves. They think it's gross. And so it's also unpacking and challenging that. I think we ignore our vulva. Like, it's almost like it's non-existent. It's like, it's your cookie, it's your flower, don't touch it. Totally. That. And even in like, I even think about body scans, like, you know, I'm a therapist and sometimes I do meditations with people and you totally just dismiss the genitals. And it's like, that's part of your body and it doesn't even need to be sexualized in order to acknowledge it. So I like to do a lot of body scans and I include the genitals to tap into and explore that.
For people who aren't familiar with what a body scan is in like a therapeutic context, what does that look like?
So body scan is when you literally, you go through each piece of your body. So you start from your head, shoulders, arms, chest, belly, genitals, legs, down to your feet. And you just like tap in and you kind of just acknowledge or experience what you're feeling in your body. This can help you tap in if you maybe disassociate, or if you just need to get more grounded. It's a way to be a check-in for yourself and just to pay attention to what's going on. It's the mindfulness, paying attention to what's going on the right here and the right now with your body.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me that even in that context, people just skip over their genitalia. And when you say gross, like, do you find that women typically think of their vulvas as being like genuinely unclean, like unhygienic? Yeah.
Yeah, and just like, I'm not allowed to touch that. Like,
yeah,
it's not mine.
The number of people I talk to who grew up, well, or particularly people who grew up in evangelical purity culture, but not exclusively, when they talk about bathing, and as a child, just like, just not even really getting in there. And you do not need to use magical scented whatever that the internet tells you you need, because it's all functioning exactly the way that it should, as it is. But yeah, some warm water. Supposed to smell like pussy, not flour. Yeah, seriously. It's supposed to smell like pussy. Thank you very much. But yeah, that was something that even for me, and I like everyone else, had my own shame and whatever built up around sex in my body that I had to unpack and process. And you know, I'm a product of my society and my surroundings as well, but like like when I became an adult and befriended people who were like, yeah, I just didn't touch it for so long. Like that really blew my mind. Cause even in a, like in a hygiene context, I never felt shame about it. Cause I was like, you gotta keep yourself clean. Like yeah. That's just body. But the shame that we built up around it is, it's heavy for some people in even that way.
Yep.
Hmm. So in addition to like the body scanning, are there certain techniques or tools you have around letting people embrace or encouraging people to embrace their fantasies?
Oh yeah, I actually did a meditation where we created these fantasies in a women's circle. It was pretty fun. But definitely, like, I let it and I was just like, you know, what does the bed look like? Who is here? Are you tied up? Are you not tied up? What are you hearing? And so I have definitely helped people explore their fantasies in that way. I think fantasies are so juicy and important. And I think a lot of people shut themselves off from their fantasies and think and also find shame in their fantasies on like what turns them on. And I'm here. I really want to normalize that because we're sexual. Well, you know, we're sexual beings and there's nothing wrong with our fantasies.
Yeah. Have you ever had any clients or you, hey, if you want to share, get like surprisingly creative with their self-arousal exploration? And if so, like, what does that look like?
Yes. It was like, it was fun because I think like the women knew we were going to be talking about sex. It was like a live podcast and we were having them ask us questions. But before we did that, we kind of did an opening to get everybody comfortable. And a lot of people were like, oh, I didn't even realize I was into that. Yeah. And so that's been something really fun. And I know for me, like I said, I'm not having sex right now and I'm like ready to play out some of these fantasies. And I'm so curious on what that's going to look like with a person. And you know, right now they're in my head and they're just fantasies. And so I'm curious, like, what will that look like and how will that change when I'm actually acting it out or including another person?
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's so, I mean, it's like the slippery slope of like sex exploration, but also like the important slippery slope is sometimes you don't know if you're going to like something in person until you try it. So it's like making sure obviously that you're trying it for the first time in a safe and consensual environment. But also like sometimes you try things that you love in your mind and they are not like I have, I think a pretty sturdy like exhibitionist fantasy in my head. And I went through a phase where like I posted a bunch of anonymous nudes on Reddit and like did shit like that where, you know, I played around with it. But like would I want to ever actually have sex in front of other people while they watch? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like that there are limits to that, right? And you just don't know until you play around with it, right? Like testing your boundaries. But to your point, like there's probably something to be said about the stability of some of the fantasies that you've been having or that some of your clients have, because you're spending so much dedicated time just being you and arousing yourself and figuring out what that looks like and what you want out of that.
Yep.
I mean, the self relationship is really important.
Yes.
Are there instances or do you ever encounter individuals who maybe try something that ends up not going how they planned? And like, what are the learnings of that other people can maybe be mindful of?
You know, so far that hasn't came up. Yeah, that hasn't came up for me, but if it would, it's just, I would guide it as like, that's just information. And I'm sure it will come up. Because like you said, if we don't know what we actually like until we try it, and working with an intimacy coach, sexual empowerment coach while you're doing that is a really safe place to do that, because you can unpack it and process if you really didn't like it and what to do with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's part of the important part of this, I think, is to like find the balance between like processing the shame and exploring? Because like, I guess my worry would be, and I'm not a therapist, strictly educator, but if I were a therapist or in my head right now, like what my anxious thought is, like if someone does something either by themselves or with a partner that they, you know, they're testing the waters and they, or they think it's going to be like a meditative experience or a growing experience, and in fact they don't like it, then is it reinforcing the shame?
Right.
But that's why they have you.
Exactly. Well, and I think it's important to set up those like safety nets of like the safe words and the, you know, I really think people need to be talking to their partners, not in the bedroom about what they want to be doing, but outside of the bedroom with what they want to be doing.
Yeah.
And if you do know you're about to try something new that you're kind of maybe skeptical about, really setting up that like the safe word and then the aftercare. What are you going to do after you've engaged in these, whatever you're exploring?
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned journaling before. Are there instances of aftercare that you recommend for people who are working towards destigmatizing, or I guess women who are working to destigmatize like self-arousal and like letting themselves get turned on?
Yeah, I like to have people use like affirmations saying, you know, I'm deserving of pleasure. I'm allowed to, you know, experience this. Journaling, self-care, taking a bath, doing just something like being kind to yourself, and not finding compassion and not doing any negative self-talk.
One of the things that ties into all of this, and you mentioned it before, is the mindfulness piece, right? And some of that, I think, plays into during instances of self-arousal and in some of the aftercare pieces that you just mentioned, like the awareness and the journaling, right? The processing. I think mindfulness, it's something that comes up a lot on the show, but I think it can be really difficult for people, especially if they're coming from a position of shame or fear or that tendency to clam up that you mentioned. What are some like practical ways that people can seek to implement mindfulness, whether during self-arousal or outside of?
I almost say like practice it outside of, I mean, practice it both, but also it's just starting with, I like to have people start with a meal, like what they're eating, pay attention to what does it taste like? What are the textures? Don't be on your phone. Don't be watching TV. Just pay attention to the meal that you're eating and really engaging in that feeling. Or when you're taking a shower, what does the warm water feel like? What does the soap smell like? It's the five senses too.
Yeah.
Really tapping into those five senses and then incorporating that. Once you have practiced that a little bit, then incorporate it into the bedroom. Cause I've literally had clients who said, Lauren, I practiced that mindfulness and I was able to come in like 2 seconds as to whereas before it took me forever.
Yeah. I definitely get that from personal experience. A lot of it is like, okay, I have to just be here with myself or with my partner, because I like, especially when I think about body image, I'd love to hear if this is something that comes up too. Like, I think it can't, it sometimes it's tied to the way that we perceive the role we play in sex, but I think sometimes it's not. But it's when I talk to so many women, they're like, in this position, I felt like my stomach looked like this, or my thighs look like this, or I was aware, like something that comes up with people in my like personal and professional life is like, I don't want to date a guy who's thinner than me, because I want to feel small and dainty, because that's what we're told we're supposed to be like in bed with a cis man. And the getting out of your head part of that is hard, but like, I think can be night or day in terms of actually like pleasure or achieving orgasm, whatever that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that I think confidence and feelings around your body totally is a huge, I think it's like a huge roadblock that keeps women from being able to experience a lot of pleasure. Something I do personally when I'm feeling insecure is coming kind of back to that, like I talk to myself a lot in my head. I talk and I say, like, my cellulite, let's say my cellulite that day is like bad and I put on shorts and I walk by the mirror and my cellulite's popping, and I, you know, I have this, I have my mom's voice in my head, or I have my voice in my head, like, yeah, sure I'm wearing those. And I challenge that and I say, that isn't mine to hold. That's an impossible standard that's been placed on me. That is not mine to fucking carry anymore.
Yeah.
And I've been a big old, I've been an advocate of like, fuck it. Like, that's been also a huge mantra of mine. So I walk outside and with my cellulite hanging out and say, fuck it, because you're not going to dim my shine because I have some, you know, lumps on my butt. So yeah. I encourage people to, you know, unpack where did this hate for my belly come from? Where did the hate for my thighs come from? Where did the hate come from me be bigger than my partner, if that's the case? And just get curious and explore that and see if you can challenge those thoughts and find the compassion for yourself.
Hell yeah. I love it. Fuck it. And I loved you. The phrase you said was, I'm not going to dim my shine. And I love that because we do shine. And I also, like, bodies are bodies. Like, we live in such a, you know, Photoshop world, and we have for a long time. But bodies are bodies. I also think that we're not holding other people to the same standards that we're holding ourselves, right? We're finding beauty in people who share the things that we don't like about ourselves, whether that's a size or shape of a part of our body or lumpy butt, which hashtag loving the lumpy butt. I got one. Everyone's got one. If we all do. I haven't ever seen one not.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of times too, our partners probably aren't even thinking what we're thinking about our own bodies half the time.
Totally.
And if they are, like, is that somebody you want to fucking be with? Like, kind of thing.
100%. Yeah. And it doesn't, I mean, like, not everyone is a body worshiper, and I get it. Like, fair enough. But like, if someone is not into your body,
yes,
then like, why are you blessing them with its presence?
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that. So one of the things that you mentioned as well is this idea of like using values to feel comfortable in your sex life or in you as a kind of a sexual being. What does that look like, or when you refer to values, like, how does that manifest in the work you do?
Yeah, so I have a lot of people do value sorts. There's like a free, it's like a motivational interviewing technique.
Okay.
That you can find on free online. And what I have people do is, a lot of times when people are like, what are your values? They list like these generic three or whatever, and I think they're made up. Are they actually theirs?
Right.
So the whole point of this is to actually like, what are your values and not what somebody's placed on you. So having people do this 100 card sort, value sort, also brings up, I think, values that people didn't even know that were important to them because they didn't even think about that word. And so I have people do a value sort. They pick their top 10 values and then they have to list them in order. And so what I'll have them do is whatever their top three are, put them somewhere and try to live life by that. And that incorporate that in your daily life, in your sexual life. Like, I had one client, one of her top values was adventure. So when we were working together, I said, how were you adventurous in your sex life this week?
Yeah.
Or how adventurous were you in your daily life? And so that kind of was like a guiding post for her to also tap into her own self and make sure she was from a place of, you know, adventure is important in my sex life, so I need to make sure that it's in my sex life, kind of thing.
How often do you find people who, at like when they do the value sorting, they're like, oh yeah, I'm already living by my values? Like, does that ever happen?
Sometimes, maybe a few.
Okay.
But I definitely think their minds are expanded on like,
yeah.
Or it's more laser focused in a sense, or more put to the forefront.
Yeah, because I feel like no one, because if you asked me mine, like, they would be the generic things as well. Like, I think like a genuine one of mine that's generic, but I think holds true, is like curiosity. and exploration, which obviously as a sex educator, I'm thinking about that literally all the fucking time. So like I've done some of the work probably already, but I feel like most people would, like, it just would blow my mind if someone was like, oh yeah, I've already got it. Don't need it. Already living by my values. Like there's just no way. That's so cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out, honestly, because I would be really curious to.
Yeah, just type in value sort and it comes up with a bunch of cards. And yeah, when I have clients who are like, oh, I was texting my friend about this. And it's like the values truly allow you to make decisions for yourself without getting in like validation from other people. And like that's my goal, is to have people really have a deep inner knowing of themselves and to lead from a place to make their own decisions to truly be happy, so that they're not leading their life the way society tells us we need to be leading it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I feel like that it's like the opposite of what you're supposed to be doing. Like I'm imagining myself sending a screenshot to my best friend, like, do you think these are my top 10 values? Which one do you think I should move up? Like, and I would, like, my ass would do that. And like any of my best friends would be like, I don't know.
Exactly.
You need to do this on your own. That's really funny. But yeah, again, like, and this is the thing, is like I have a therapist, not a sex therapist, but she hears me talk about sex anyway. I feel like she's a star of the podcast because every fucking episode I'm like, yes, my therapist. I love her, I worship her. Like, she challenges all of my shit like that, and I would be like, I don't want to do the values sort. And she'd be like, she's like, this is why you're still in therapy. But I do love shit like that. So do you have like examples of someone who like saw a value in their list or identified a value maybe they hadn't recognized before and like came back to her and like, holy shit, I did the craziest thing in bed to align with my values? Does that ever happen?
That hasn't happened yet.
It will. I'm sure it will.
I hope so.
Like one of these days, whether it's adventure or something else, someone's going to be like, and I did anal for the first time. Like I lubed up and suddenly I was ready to go. I was loose as a goose. Not me, but I mean, I love ass play, but it wasn't that easy. It wasn't overnight.
Yes, that takes practice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's, yeah, talk about learning moments. What advice do you have for people who are in relationships or otherwise partnered when they are navigating the values discovery, learning or practicing mindfulness, practicing self-arousal, in like communicating with a partner or partners about that individual exploration?
Yeah. Ooh. I think a lot of times people are afraid to communicate, or they don't know how to communicate. And a lot of times they're afraid that they're going to hurt their person's feelings, or they're going to be rejected, or the person's going to leave them because something is important to them. I encourage people to just be honest and try to be as open as you can, whether that's verbally communicating it, writing it in a letter, doing whatever you feel comfortable to communicate to your partner, like, hey, I am going to take some space and explore this for myself. And in hopes that we have deeper connection, because I'm deeper connected with myself, that I can actually connect with you. Because I think, so I've done a lot of healing in like codependency, and like a prime thing of codependency is I was so enmeshed with my other person that I couldn't actually truly be intimate with them, even though I had this illusion that I am so intimate with them because I'm enmeshed with them. And in reality, it was me running away from being truly intimate with myself as well and getting to know myself. And so I think it's so important for us to really get comfortable with ourselves so we can truly be intimate with that other person.
Yeah, and it's a good point. And we've talked about processing shame, but also just like processing your relationship with the other person, if there is another person or other people. Because I feel like even if you have or are working on a really healthy relationship with yourself, you also have to be able to take a step back and see what kind of person you're engaging with and like the foundation of that relationship as well. And I know for me, when I started going through my own trauma unpacking, my own therapy journey, my own sexual healing journey, I was in a long-term relationship. I'm not in it anymore. But I was in a long-term relationship with someone who I think kind of was flabbergasted because I was changing. And even if it was as minuscule as actually, like, I like this in bed and I hadn't told you, or like, I don't like this in bed and I hadn't told you because I didn't want you to get upset and leave me, or actually, I want to take time on my own today, and like unpacking, uncovering things about yourself and then trying to share this thing. And like, if they're not responsive, you know, that's something you have to work out with them, you know, for better or for worse. In the end, for me, there were lots of points of incompatibility in that relationship, but I think my own self-exploration and self-discovery was a big part of what ended that relationship. Yes. Which is, you know, I mean, it for me worked out in the end, but I'm sure for other people can be heartbreaking and scary, but it's just part of the journey, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and so I was recently in a conference and what was the word? Like the one of the things that helps a relationship be really healthy is reciprocity and just being curious on what the being willing to being open with what the other person wants and being willing to maybe trying new things and exploring new things is one of the key factors of like keeping the spark alive in relationships and keeping relationships going. So I almost would say your like self-discovery journey with yourself and hopefully your other partner could also be doing it is actually going to be better for the relationship.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then that possibly, you know, isn't the relationship for you.
Yeah. Yeah. On the flip side, when I was really at the like crux of my therapy journey, when it really peaked, it was, you know, years later and I was in a new long-term relationship, my current long-term relationship. And he was a trooper, right? And he didn't have to be, right? It wasn't his shit to unpack, but he was there physically and emotionally. And as my relationship to my body changed during that, my relationship to sex changed and evolved, he was patient and like understanding. And I still wanted to fuck, don't get me wrong, but it took different forms. And like what I needed took a different shape. Not to say that it was his job to just like be malleable and mold to that, but it was a conversation, right? It was a dialogue. And I also sought to meet him halfway as much as I could. You know, and if there were times I couldn't, then you just have to communicate about it. But yeah, it's such an important part of it. Like, and maybe that's something that I hadn't even thought about, like as a cis woman in a relationship with a cis man, like maybe like we as the cis woman forget that maybe they need to do some self-arousal and self-exploration too, because they're getting fed the same heteronormative shit that we are. Just looks different.
Definitely. And I think men literally are like pleasure their penis and that's it. And it's like you have for an sure. entire body. Like,
yeah.
So like the patriarchy fucks us both, you know? So totally. Fucks everybody. So definitely.
Totally. It's true. It's true. But I always say, and it's just one of those things, and I feel like I have like 8 catchphrases I always say on the show, but they're always so fucking important. But like, look, I have a clitoris and I love it. If I also had a prostate, I'd fucking use it.
Yes.
And yes. Everyone should be empowered to at the very least try it. If you have a prostate, explore it, right? It's like there's so many different parts of your body, but like that one's that's an easy one to try. And like the outcome, if you know, relax and use the permanent lube and like self-explore, certainly I'm not saying, you know, get railed by someone else tomorrow, but like explore your own body. And like that's a pretty fucking cool pleasure point.
Yep.
Yeah. Patriarchy fucks us all. T-shirt. It exists. That t-shirt exists. There's so many.
Not in the good way.
So true. Not in the way that I wanted. I'm literally picturing the I Am Knuff Barbie from Barbie. Oh. Did you see Barbie?
Yes.
The I Am Knuff. That's literally what just came to mind. I thought of patriarchy cat and then it just went downhill from there. You guys wonder what lives in my brain. It's ass play and movie references. And that is all I am. But yeah, I feel like if you're in a point of self-exploration, like cue other people to do it too. Mm-hmm. Do you ever work with couples?
So far I haven't. I think eventually I will.
Yeah.
But right now, definitely just been focusing on the individual, and because it's just been such an empowering thing for my own journey to, you know, I've been alone working on my own, and I feel there's so much value in that.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I feel like working with couples must be difficult. I mean, I've spoken to lots of sex therapists and sex coaches or other sort of relevant professionals that do work with couples in different contexts. And it's more cooks, right? It's more cooks, but that makes sense. And certainly with your lived experience of feeling empowered as you do on your own and in your own self-exploration, that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. I don't know, honestly, I think I'd prefer just like, I'd prefer if the person I'm working with is in a relationship for them to do couples on their own kind of thing. And then yeah. I'll be working with the individual. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. You kind of said this before, but just to clarify, like most of your clients are cis women.
Yeah.
Like you don't have that many men clients.
In my therapy practice, I do actually have a few men.
Okay.
But I'm currently like, so far, this is super unfortunate. I've wanted to work with men, but every man that comes into my DMs through my Instagram has been inappropriate and has ruined that for all men. So I'm sorry, men, but that's why that's not a thing. In my therapy practice, it's like different. Like people usually are coming to me for like trauma or depression or anxiety, but we have gotten, I let them know, hey, I'm a sex positive therapist, and that's came up. So.
Got it.
I have one client right now who's in like a fair recovery, like recovering from some affairs that he was engaging in. And so we are working with sex in that realm. But yeah.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. It was tricky for me when I wanted to go into therapy because I wanted a therapy for my mental illness, but also like wanted someone who was like kink friendly, basically. And I struggled to find that. I mean, I found, again, I'm obsessed with my therapist, but I did have to like in my first session say, like, these are the things I'm engaging in, right? My ties to these different people through my sexuality are important to me. Can you hang? And I was like, you don't have to know all the jargon. You don't, like, I can explain it to you. And actually, the first time I, like, told her I was queer, which I hadn't really, like, I had mentioned but hadn't ever said it, she was like, I didn't know the depths to which this was part of your identity. And I was like, that's fair because it's not integral to my anxiety and depression. But, you know, here we are. But it's like, it's important to find the balance. But it's cool that you advertise yourself as being sex. Obviously, I guess if they look into your other practice, they would know. But like, it's important and also important for people to remember that penis owners, cis dudes, have sex issues.
Yes.
Yeah. How does consent you know, kind of manifest in the conversations you have with clients, and how do you encourage people who are still feeling some of that shame or stigma around their sexuality to navigate consent?
I actually kind of like have people kind of play like a fun sexy consent game where it's almost like you have to ask your partner to do every single little thing to like get used to asking permission, like, can I kiss you here? And almost like turning it into like this sexual like power play in a sense, but it's just so like you get used to saying, can I do this? Can I do that? And maybe even having your partner practice being like, no, I'd actually rather you do this. Trying to like take the pressure off of, you know, kind of making it this I don't know, like textbook sterile thing.
Yeah.
And making it like light, fun. It's still, I'm a big component on like light and fun, but still really fucking serious, you know?
Totally. So, there are steamy ways to ask for things. Like, and I think we fear making sex transactional or like making it weird. I mean, first of all, sex is weird and should be weird. Bodies are crazy. But yeah, there's like such a social like awkwardness about it. But if you make it sexual, like, actually, no, I don't want that, but I do want this. I mean, like, it's, you know, sure, like if someone says no, I don't want that, but here's an alternative, I might for a second be like, oh fuck, I did something wrong, like I, you know, jump into panic mode. But
if you, but like, we would work through that. That's like also why you're with somebody as well. And also like, don't, it's, I know this is harder said than done, but it's like you can't take anything anybody does personally. Like for that's sure. Another mantra that I have like going through my head. It's not personal, it's not personal, it's not personal.
Yes, and I have that one. Often need that one.
And I think what's important with consent is, you know, this person is consenting to play with me. And I think that could also help you kind of change the neural pathways into, if I'm engaging in a consensual act with somebody, I'm getting permission to do this. And even if they're telling me no, that's not me doing anything wrong. That's just redirection.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And redirection's a good word for it. Like, it's there are so many different ways to approach something and so many like endless things to try. When I educate outside of podcasting and content creation, I'm usually working with middle school and high schoolers. And so much of what I tell them is like, if you're not ready to bone anybody or receive the boning or whatever that looks like, you should consider mutual masturbation. Like there are things that we forget, like mutual masturbation or a good old-fashioned hand job or finger. Like there are other things that you can explore that are boundary setting but explorative. Obviously with like two consenting adults, it can take even more forms, right, that are, you know, more or less hardcore as well. There's like lots to explore without trying to set up restrictive boundaries, I guess. Yeah, so for people who are interested in pursuing sex therapy or sex coaching, they're looking for some guidance and support. What does working with you look like? Obviously, you have sort of a non-sexual practice in addition to more specific sexual practice. Do you do like hybrid work, or what forms does that take?
Yeah, so in my sex coaching practice right now, I have like intimacy audits where it's like two sessions. We really kind of talk about what's working for your intimate life and what's not working and things to incorporate and try. And I have my like long-term containers where it's like working with me for 6 months. That's going to be like really unpacking a lot of stuff, deep diving. And I think I'm going to start doing some embodiment practices where we just like sensually dance. I'm cool. Still figuring out what that's gonna look like. But I'm thinking because dancing was so important for me to get in my body, and I think like learning how to move in and open up your hips like just releases so much like sensual energy. And like before I started pole dancing, I moved like a stick, like
me.
And once you learn how to like tuck and tilt your hips and like move your hips, it opens up some sensual juice that was missing.
Yeah.
And so I think I really want to start doing, I don't know if it's going to be weekly, monthly, what that's going to look like yet, but just like maybe starting a Facebook group where I go live and you can follow along with me. We can wear something sexy so you can tap into your sensual self and learn how to move and touch your body.
I love that. Yeah, and by the time this episode comes out in 2024, at the beginning of the year, you may already have that established. So listeners, if it exists, it's linked in the show notes below. I know you mentioned you're based in Ohio. Do you take clients virtually in addition to in person?
One or the other? Only virtually. I would love to do some in person women's circles or in person events, hopefully soon. I'm licensed in New Mexico, so if you are looking for therapy in that sense, I can do therapy in New Mexico.
Perfect.
Cool.
And then for people who want to reach out, how should they get in touch with you?
My Instagram is Oh Yeah Coaching. And I love how like earlier when you introduced me, because Oh Yeah Coaching was literally like came up with like in a way of where it's like questioning like, oh yeah, or oh yeah. And like, yeah. You can take it as you, whatever comes in your head. That's kind of like, I thought it was a fun little play on that.
I love it. Yeah. I fully grunted it. Shyly, obviously. I didn't really put my whole body into it, but it was a grunt. In my head, it's a full body grunt. But I love it. Yeah, so I will, folks, link to Lauren's website and Instagram in the show notes below. If you are a penis owner seeking sex therapy or intimacy coaching, don't be weird in the DMs, please. Yeah. Don't be creepy. Be respectful. Lauren's a professional.
Please look up what consent means and
no yeah. dick pics, no weird questions. Thank you so much.
I had a man act like a woman and try to like hire me for my services and was like, can my man sit in on these services? And like, we know when you're being a weirdo. Like we just know. So stop, please.
The way that my face fell when you said that. Yeah, what the like, don't do shit like that. Lauren's a professional just trying to make the world a bit better. Seriously. Like, let Lauren help you. Lauren, thank you so much for your time today. This has been really fun. As I shared for folks, click below, give Lauren a follow on Insta, check out her website, DM Lauren or I if you have any questions. And Lauren, again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.